I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Leon Morris, an editor of the New Reform High Holy Day Prayer Book, first of its kind in over 35 years. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I always love this particular edition of Two Jewish. I mean, I love them all, but still, this one's kind of more special. I tend to title it in my own mind, The Vacation and Summer Camp Two Jewish Show. When we get to late June, it's definitely time to start thinking about leaving town and journeying outward and onward. It's hot, really hot now, and officially summer is over a week old, and so it must be time to play the immortal, eternally entertaining cut from the late great comedian Alan Sherman about kids going off to summer camp. Here it is, an annual tradition on Two Jewish for the past nearly 12 years, believe it or not, the classic tune, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators, and the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Mudda Fada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mudda, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball, gee, that's better. Mudda Fada, kindly disregard this letter.
A truly legendary piece of American Jewish music. It is, of course, very funny and human and appropriate for this time of year, what with kids going away to what used to be called sleepaway camp and parents enjoying life again, missing their lovely, sweet children every single day they're gone. The truth is that with the cost of overnight camps these days, what parents may find themselves missing is financial solvency. I have two children at a Jewish camp this year, plus one going away to college soon. It really isn't that expensive. I just had to sell the family car to pay for it, turn over all of my clothing to Goodwill, and we'll be serving top ramen quite a lot this coming year, but it's all worth it. The truth is, It really is worth it, because when kids attend a Jewish camp, they come back with an extraordinarily natural feeling about what it's like to live Jewishly every day, without a thought of protesting or criticizing the experience. At camp, being Jewish is completely cool, the way it should seem in everyday life and at the synagogue, but doesn't always. If we could introduce all of our children to a total Jewish environment like camp, make it a regular part of their lives, we would make enormous progress towards ensuring the future of the American Jewish community for the next generation. But it's also true that when we are able to replicate the kind of dedicated, embracing Jewish experiences for adults and families and seniors in our own homes and in our temples, we begin to create the kind of future for Judaism that's essential for us to continue to flourish in this remarkable country. For Judaism was not made to be experienced in tiny bits or only in the synagogue. Judaism, a way of life, as my grandfather, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan, called it in his book of that title. And as a way of life, it is meant to include experiences and insights into every area of human endeavor. When our synagogue holds a temple retreat or an Israel pilgrimage trip or an extended study session or a class like Adult B'nai Mitzvah or Adult Confirmation, we're also trying to create a kind of Jewish camp experience for grown-ups. Because it's when we make Judaism a part of every aspect of our lives that we gain the greatest sense of goodness, holiness, and serenity in our lives. So do send your kids or grandchildren to Jewish camp, but take some time to include Jewish rituals, study, and play in your own life every day, too. It's also time now for vacation, and lots of us are heading out to enjoy the wide world outside of our home cities and towns. One of the great unsuspected pleasures of traveling is the chance to explore Jewish sites and living Jewish communities in far-flung places. I can assure you that we Jews have lived pretty much everywhere, and we have active synagogues in places you might never imagine would have them. And it is always worthwhile and often surprisingly gratifying to go out and find Jewish communities, to meet people, to pray, or to see the remarkable places we Jews have created in all the far corners of the world. You can find Jewish places almost everywhere you go. Well, maybe not Antarctica or Fiji, perhaps, but almost everywhere else. Look up Jewish travel online and just make sure to call or email or text ahead if you're going to a temple. In today's world, many of the places around the world ask for advance information on who is coming for security reasons. Of course, the greatest Jewish destination of all is Israel, Eretz Yisrael, the Holy Land, and I'll have a great deal to tell you about that next week. But there are synagogues and Jewish museums and Jewish community centers and cultural centers and other wonderful Jewish places to visit in every corner of this globe. Search them out on your travels this summer. To continue our theme of Jewish summer experiences, here's a fun tune from the irrepressible Doug Kotler. In honor of visiting Jews everywhere, or at least everywhere in the USA, or at least California.
I'm with the best of all 12 tribes.
That was Doug Kotler's very silly California Jews for summer vacations to Jewish communities everywhere in the USA and everywhere else. You know, it's been 35 years since the Reform Movement produced a new Machzor, a High Holy Day prayer book, for use by the some 900 congregations in North America who belong to the Reform Movement. When we come back this morning on Too Jewish, we'll meet one of the editors of the new Machzor and find out why and how they decided to create a new book and what we can expect during Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur services in coming years. Meet Rabbi Leon Morris, an old friend, and find out from him what it's all about when we return on Too Jewish.
I was 15 when I started my first business, and I never looked back. When it came time for college, I looked for a university that would foster my entrepreneurial spirit and that also had a sense of community. ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business ranks among the best in the nation, and the several Jewish organizations on campus make it easy for ASU to become a home away from home. At ASU, I'm upholding the traditions of my family while pursuing my dreams, and as CEO of Simple, I'm well on my way. I'm Arthur Steingart, and I'm a Sun Devil. ASU. Dream it. Do it. Visit asu.edu.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning. Rabbi Leon Morris is one of the editors of the new Reform Movement Machzor, the High Holy Day Prayer Book, which is designed to replace the Gates of Repentance, which has been the Reform Movement Prayer Book for, about 40 years. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. How are you, Rabbi Kohan?
I'm well, Rabbi Morris. I might have to call you Leon. We've known each other too long not to.
25 years?
At least, yeah. Yeah, I think about 25 years.
Yeah.
That means that, of course, we're still just as young as we were when we met.
Well, you are.
You are very kind. Let's talk about the process that led to the concept that we needed a new High Holy Day prayer book for the Reform Movement's largest movement in America. I guess, in a way, the largest movement in the world of Jews. What prompted the decision that this is the time to have a new prayer book?
Right. Well, as many of your listeners probably know, there was a new Reform daily and Shabbat and festival prayer book, Mishkan Tefillah, that was released about 7 years ago.
After about a 20-year process?
Yeah. So that was the Siddur, the prayer book that replaced Gates of Prayer, which I think had been published in 1974. And there were always plans for a companion volume to that, a new High Holy Day prayer book. And discussions, as was the case regarding the weekday and Shabbat and festival prayer book, discussions have been going on for years, involving many colleagues throughout the country about what a 21st century High Holy Day prayer book should be like. And this process for us started in earnest about 5 years ago when four editors were chosen and a Machzor advisory board of the Central Conference of American Rabbis was formed. So we've been working actively on this for about 5 years, and the prayer book will be published next summer. It will come out around this time, a year from now, so that congregations can use it for the first time on the High Holidays in 2015. 5777.
Something poetic about 5777.
Oh, wait, or is it 577?
Actually, 5776 is
it'll be 5776. Okay, so yeah. It's almost poetic.
Almost poetic. In the course of developing a new Mosser, you had to make a number of choices. We'll talk about those later in the show. But what do you think is the most dramatic difference that people will find with this new prayer book?
There are so many. I think that the first thing that people will be struck with is a kind of paradoxical observation, which is that this is the most creative prayer book the Reform Movement has ever published, and this is the most traditional prayer book that the Reform Movement has ever published. Both of those will be accurate descriptions of the book. Part of that is because Mishkan Tefillah, the current weekday festival and Shabbat prayer book, introduce this format of having two facing pages that have a relationship with each other, where the right-hand facing page is the more classic, traditional text of the prayer, and the left-hand side provides poetry, readings and prayers that serve as a counterpoint to what's on the right side, that represent maybe a different theological position. So given that format, and I think we've used that format very well here, there are numerous places, almost on every page, where there is both a kind of reclaiming of the traditional classic text in ways that make it usable by a really robust sublinear commentary, below the line in smaller print at the bottom of each page, as well as this very creative response on the left-hand facing page.
So, in a way, very creative, but also we'll talk about how it's a return to tradition, which is some of the eclectic development of our movement. We'll continue this discussion with Rabbi Leon Morris about the new High Holy Day Mosser for the Reform Movement when we come back on To Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Cohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website by streaming them from there or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to welcome back a recurring feature of Too Jewish, Deep Wisdom from Zen Judaism. Wherever you go, there you are. Your luggage is another story. That was a koan, I mean a koan, of Zen Judaism. You know, even in the heat of summer, Shabbat is a joyous weekly occurrence that we are ordained to celebrate. Here's the classic American Jewish folk rock group Safam and their wonderful version of Yismachu, a celebration of the Sabbath.
Yismachu g'malechutecha, Yismachu g'malechutecha, Shomre Shabbat v'kore onek, onek Shabbat. Yismachu g'malechutecha, Yismachu g'malechutecha, Shomre Shabbat v'kore onek, onek Shabbat.
That was Safam's version of Yismachu, a celebration of Shabbat, playing weekly at a temple near you. We welcome our Mivi non-Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Oshrat, there are many supporters of Israel all around the world, but perhaps the most passionate are not Jews. They're evangelical Christians. There's a Christians United for Israel organization that does a lot of work. There are many other Christian organizations that support Israel. And I recall during the Intifadas, both Intifadas, particularly the Second Intifada, the only tourists besides rabbis who were going to Israel regularly and some ultra-Orthodox were the Christian evangelicals who never stopped going no matter how many bombs went off.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about what it's like for an Israeli to see that level of Christian support for Israel.
I can tell you that I was so amazed it was a few weeks ago when the Kufa event, they had like a night.
This is the Christians United for Israel organization,
yeah.
Kufi or Kufi, right?
Yeah, and they did like just after the Yom HaTzmaut, I think it was May 15,
right.
And they did like an event, night of support of Israel. And, you know, it's one thing to see Jews or Israelis support Israelis.
They're supposed
Israelis.
To do that.
Yeah, or it's, you know, but then I saw all the pastors coming to the stage and reading all kind of, you know, parts from their Bibles. And then, like, with passion, tell us, the audience, like, that we need to support Israel people in Israel, not just to visit Israel because of the, you know, the holy sites for them, but because of part of being good Christian is to support the people that God chose. And v'kol mevarecha avarech, v'kol mekalelcha kalel. And it was, you know, 2 hours that really inspired me, and I really loved, and I'm in touch with them and other pastors and other organizations, Friends of Israel, Kufi, others, and it's really, I can say, inspired me and energized me to work more with the non-Jews, and I think that's, you know, this needs to be part of my goals.
I think it's great and an interesting part of the equation, because as somebody growing up in a period in America, from my perspective, in which there was more fear of Christian support, not belief that Christians supported Israel, not belief that Christians accepted Jews, as even legitimately another religious tradition, it's been a tremendous change in the level of support. I was told there are as many Christian tourists to Israel as there are Jewish tourists, maybe more, and as many evangelicals or more evangelicals going to visit Israel now than Jewish tourists. Do you know if that's the case?
I don't know the exact numbers, but as I can see, like around the Sea of Galilee, because I lived close to
the Sea of Galilee, yeah. Right, which is such a center for Christian pilgrimage.
Yeah. And also in Nazareth,
Nazareth. Right, in Nazareth, right?
Yeah, a lot.
Bethlehem.
A lot of, and of course Jerusalem, yeah, but I don't know if like the, you know, the exact numbers, number.
But
yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah, it's impressive.
A very interesting factor in the world today. Thanks very much, Ashraf.
Toda rabah.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about a delightful subject, wine, and its origins and history in Jewish life. Jews became prominent in wine in ways nobody might have expected. Perhaps the greatest name in wine is Rothschild. Talk a little bit about kind of the different areas and ways that became so important.
Right. Well, as you know, one of my favorite of several part-time jobs is leading small group wine tasting tours to sort of micro regions, like part of the Willamette Valley in Oregon, or the area around Lake Chelan in north central Washington, or better known regions in the old world, where vineyards were largely planted by ancient Greeks and then replanted by Romans, and Jews have been living for centuries. Alsace is a classic example, where there's wine, there's also schnapps or eau de vie, and there's also a long tradition of resident Jewish wine dealers and wine merchants. For those of your listeners who may not be familiar with the wine world, wines are usually divided into so-called Old World wines and New World wines. And the Old World is Europe, where most of the vineyards have been producing grapes since antiquity. And those are countries like France, Italy, Germany, Austria, Hungary, that we've associated for literally millennia with the production of wine. New World wines come from an increasing number of countries and an increasing diversity of regions within those countries. So the obvious New World is North America, where we produce great wines, not only in California, but in almost every state of the Union, particularly the states of the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, some really great wines. And Canada, not only in Southern Ontario, which is well known and kind of adjacent to the New York State grape growing region.
But British Columbia has a great wine
region. Right. The southeastern corner of British Columbia is the Okanagan Valley, which eventually becomes the Columbia River Valley in Washington State, and then the Columbia River forms the border between Oregon and Washington. So, I mean, the most obvious New World wines are North American wines, but then there's obviously a growing production of South American wines, particularly Argentina and Chile, which are rivals, but not really, in the sort of continental epicenter of wine production is Mendoza, which has a nice old Jewish community and where the Jews play an important role in the wine business. And then Australia and New Zealand are classic New World wines of growing importance as well in terms of their market share in the global wine market. Also, I suppose, although I don't know this firsthand, given the importance of the South African wine industry, it's hard to imagine that Jewish families in South Africa don't play any role in that sector at all. I mean, they must, just given Jewish tradition and Jewish geography. So that's a quick survey of where wines are around the world, and all those places have Jewish communities, and even sort of new emerging wine supplying countries like Bulgaria and Romania also have large Jewish communities, which have historically been intimately associated with the production, exchange, and consumption of wine.
You know, the only place we didn't talk about is Israel, but maybe next time. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. Three guys are about to be executed, and they're asked what they wish to have for their last meal on earth. The Italian responds, fettuccine Alfredo, which he is served and then quickly shot. The Frenchman requests a filet mignon, which he is served, eats, and then is promptly shot. The Jew requests a plate of fresh figs. Fresh figs, the jailer says? Yes, fresh figs. But they're out of season, the jailer tells him. So new, says the Jew. I'll wait. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Balak in the book of Numbers, which includes some of the best words an outsider ever delivered about our people. In the portion, one of just two in the whole Torah named after a non-Jew, 40 years of wandering have passed, and the Israelites have finally arrived on the boundaries of the land of Canaan. They seem unstoppable to their opponents. Balak, the king of Moab, comes up with a novel plan. He will hire Balaam, a pagan sorcerer, who will curse the Israelites and destroy their chances of defeating his own Moabite army and entering his land. His country will be saved, and the children of Israel defeated for all time. Only the scheme doesn't work. Balaam may be a polytheistic prophet, but he is also an honest man who conveys only what God permits him to say. After consulting the Almighty, Balaam agrees to do the deed, but only if God allows him to do so, and only to say what God tells him. And so, we're given the intriguing spectacle of Balaam the sorcerer three times trying to curse the people of Israel, only to discover that the words that come out of his mouth are not curses, but blessings. The last of these orations is a text that has become the prayer we use whenever we enter a synagogue. Matovu o halecha Yaakov, how good are your tents, O Jacob, your homes, Israel. Somehow, the best laid plans of Israel's enemies go awry, transformed by the hand of God. Without being too deterministic, we know that in recent decades, many organizations and even nations have planned the destruction of our people and of our country, Israel. Although their efforts have injured us, we ultimately have triumphed. Perhaps more importantly, the personal message of Torah portion of Balak is a subtle one. Usually the way it works in life is that we intend to bring blessing, but bring tsoros, trouble, instead. But if we rely on God's help and inspiration, we'll find that even our less than nobly motivated actions can bring blessing in the place of curses. It is all a matter of remembering the true source for inspiration and creativity, and therefore of blessing, which is God. Our Jewish poetry slam this morning in this season of long days and hot sun comes from poet Louis Daniel Brodsky. It's his verse, Brailing the Sun. I squint into the sun's brilliant eye. 10,000 images like flints spitting sparks leap through the abyss, the vast resonating chasm in which the tradition sleeps. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy rise from silence, reciting Moses' echoes left drying on papyrus scrolls, hidden in clay pots in Qumran caves, and forgotten during the diaspora. My eyes float in steaming springs whose undying fire crackles inside and under the brain. Faith is the mind's only liberation. The sky is my Bible, the horizon my Kabbalah. I am their scholar, their scribe. Trying with my tiny pinpoint to see God's myriad vision through my tightened eyelids and translate his insight into music sung by deaf mutes. Reason heeded by dreamers. That was the poem Brailing the Sun by Louis Daniel Brodsky. Our guest this morning, Rabbi Leon Morris, is one of the key editors of the new Reform Movement Machzor, the first High Holy Day prayer book, first new one for the Reform Movement in 35 years. Find out what choices went into changing the format for prayer on the most important of Jewish festivals for the largest movement in American Jewry when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114.
I was 15 when I started my first business, and I never looked back. When it came time for college, I looked for a university that would foster my entrepreneurial spirit and that also had a sense of community. ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business ranks among the best in the nation, and the several Jewish organizations on campus make it easy for ASU to become a home away from home. At ASU, I'm upholding the traditions of my family while pursuing my dreams, and as CEO of Simple, I'm well on my way. I'm Arthur Steingart, and I'm a Sun Devil. ASU. Dream it. Do it. Visit asu.edu.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world, with commentary from guest newscaster Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
Shalom, this is Rabbi Batsheva Appel with the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. In Detroit, the Presbyterian Church USA narrowly approved divestment in their General Assembly by a vote of 310 to 303. The overture approved divestment from three companies which do business with Israel, Hewlett-Packard, Caterpillar, and Motorola, on the grounds that their products abet the Israeli occupation and that the church did not want to profit from such investments. A last-minute amendment stating that the church was not divesting from Israel, only these U.S.-based companies, was added as an attempt to disassociate the move from the controversial boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. In Israel, former Shin Bet chief Avraham Shalom died. Avraham Shalom helped to bring Adolf Eichmann to justice, but he later resigned over the controversial slaying of bus terrorists. He was born in Vienna in 1928, and his family moved to the British-mandated Palestine when he was 11 years old. He took part in the 1948 War of Independence, and after leaving the IDF, joined the Shin Bet in 1950, where he rose to become director in 1980. He held the position until 1986. Shalom was a major figure in some of the most prominent operations carried out by the Shin Bet. He was deputy commander of the mission to seize Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann in 1960. Eichmann was captured in Argentina and brought back to Israel to face trial for his activities during the Holocaust. The Chinese city of Harbin reopened a 105-year-old synagogue to the public after an extensive restoration. The main synagogue on Harbin's Tongjiang Street was reopened last week after 12 months of renovation. In the 19th and 20th centuries, thousands of Jews immigrated to the northeastern city of Harbin to escape persecution in Europe and Tsarist Russia, establishing one of the largest Jewish communities in the Far East. However, the reopened synagogue is not meant to function as a place of worship, but as a concert theater. This week in France, a new chief rabbi was selected, Rabbi Chaim Corsia, a Jewish chaplain in the French army. With the death of Paul the Octopus in 2010, after his amazing World Cup predictions, there have been other animals trying to prove their prediction skills for the outcomes of the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. Max, a red-ruffed lemur who lives at the Zoological Center Tel Aviv Ramat Gan Safari, has so far correctly predicted 7 out of 12 matches, including the surprise upset of Spain. Max is given 3 dishes of food to choose from. 2 are marked with the flags of the countries competing in a particular match, and the 3rd is labeled Thai. Whichever dish Max picks first is his pick as the winner of the match. Whichever dish Max picks first is his pick as the winner of the match. Max will need to improve his accuracy if he hopes to inherit the mantle of Paul the Octopus. This is Rabbi Batsheva Appel, and that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back the two Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Leon Morris. He's one of four editors of the new Reform Movement High Holy Day Machzor, the prayer book used throughout the Reform Movement, starting in about a year for the Jewish High Holy Days. Good morning. Welcome back, Leon.
Good morning, Sam.
So, four editors. Now, I've been told that nothing good has ever been done by committee, except perhaps the American Revolution. Tell us. My grandfather was an editor of one of the revisions of the old High Holy of the Union Prayer Book and Union Prayer Book 2, which was the old High Holy Day Prayer Book, very old, two editions ago. In those days, there was kind of one principal editor. How do four people work cooperatively to create a text that has consistency?
So this has been one of the creative challenges, which I think will also have a lot of creative payoff. You're absolutely right. All the former prayer books of our movement have really had one lead editor who more or less drafted the book itself and then invited response, feedback. This was a very different process. And of course, it makes it a longer process. And of course, the four of us came to this task with very different perspectives, on liturgy, on tradition, on change, on innovation. And I think the book will be stronger as a result of those healthy tensions running through our work. I'll describe, you know, a couple of the tensions. One is a tension between what my colleague and co-editor, Edwin Goldberg, rabbi in Chicago, what he calls zero-based Machzor building, which is on some level we should be approaching this task by saying, if there wasn't such a thing as a Machzor for the High Holy Days, what should be in there, given what we know about the people in our congregations? What would be a useful, what would make for a useful tool for people to do their work that we want them to do? So, in other words, and he's, I don't think he really means, in fact, I know he doesn't really mean, let's jettison the inherited Machzor, but yes. But for heuristic purposes, what if we were to approach this from the standpoint of something not existing? What would we want in there, and how can that guide our work? And I would say one of the things that I brought to this process and has then been part of this creative tension is a concept of a creative reclamation, creative retrieval. How can we access as much as possible from the inherited traditional prayer book? And how can we make it work in the 21st century, and how can we make it ours? I would say my assumption coming into the work of prayer book editing is that the inherited prayer book has a great deal to teach us and a great deal to give us, is valuable, and yet we have to undergo a process of translation, of making it usable. So those two things, zero-based Machzor building, creative retrieval, very healthy tension. I think there's also been a tension that's equally healthy between asking ourselves, what do our congregants want? What do our congregants know? What are they familiar with? What are they comfortable with? What will resonate with them and their lives? That's on the one side. And on the other side is an aspirational piece of, what do we want our congregants to be familiar with? What would we like our congregants 10, 20, 30 years from now using this book? What would we like them to know? What kinds of prayers would we want to become standard in the American Reform Synagogue.
You know, there are certain aspects of the Machzor that you are replacing, not you personally, of course, but that this Machzor is replacing the Gates of Repentance that were very traditional, that hadn't been seen in the Reform movement maybe ever in the United States, certainly in a very long time, if so. And then there were aspects that were eclectic, never felt like they came together. For me, the afternoon of Yom Kippur in this, in the Gates of Repentance, never made any sense. When you start with a zero-based process, you're saying we're going to do this all over. And I'm not sure, having been a survivor of many zero-based budgets, I can tell you they never end up terribly different from the budget you had the year before, but it's a longer and more complicated process. I'm assuming that in the course of this, you made some choices to eliminate some traditional text, keep some traditional text, as well as bring in some special stuff. What's going to end up on the cutting room floor that you never thought would be there?
A great question. You know, to respond accurately and honestly, I think very little. I think that much more was reclaimed and reworked. There are some radical sorts of moves here, but it's less about leaving things out and much more about bringing things in, but sometimes in an untraditional way. I'll give you a couple of examples on sort of both sides of this. There was a sense among the editors that having the shofar as late in the service of Rosh Hashanah morning was really a kind of missed opportunity, that the takeaway of Rosh Hashanah is that it's Yom Teruah, it's the day of blowing the shofar. And in a traditional context, the main set of shofar blasts occur during the Musaf service, which is late in the service. It's an additional Amidah tacked on for Shabbat and festivals to the morning service. We eliminated Musaf, the Reform movement, over a century ago. So it's not necessarily a given that the shofar should come toward the very end.
But of course, in a traditional service, you would also have some shofar calls in a Shacharit service. Correct.
So, and what we had with Gates of Repentance and the Union Prayer Book, too, was kind of a riff on that after the Torah service. So there was an idea that was floated by some of my colleagues. What would it mean to take these three sets of blasts, develop these three themes, Malchuyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot, more fully, and have them occur at three different points during the service itself? So in a way, it's not on the cutting room floor because we actually were able this way to develop each section more fully, but it is a fairly non-traditional, or a very non-traditional move. Another example, sort of in the opposite direction, is whereas there was something in Gates of Repentance and Union Prayer Book 2 called Avodah, we have developed something much fuller that is much more of an heir to the traditional Avodah service. Avodah, for your listeners, is really the highlight service of Yom Kippur. It's when in a traditional synagogue, the liturgy recalls the ancient rite of Yom Kippur with the high priest entering the Holy of Holies and offering a confession on behalf of himself and his family, all the priests, and the entire nation of Israel. And when the liturgy described how the high priest would emerge from the Holy of Holies, having survived this after 7 days of preparation and rehearsal, there is exuberance in the traditional synagogue of kind of a dramatic reading of reenacting this historical origin of Yom Kippur. That gets a mention in Gates of Repentance, but we've developed this idea of an Avodah service in a really creative way that uses this ancient ritual as a launching off point to 15 steps toward leading a holy life. And the 15 steps are derived from 15 psalms of ascent and 15 steps that led to the temple in Jerusalem. So it's very much connected to this ancient Yom Kippur rite, but going kind of far with it in terms of the spiritual life of 21st century Jews. There are a lot of piyutim, a lot of medieval liturgical poems that have become reintroduced in this new High Holy Day prayer book. Part of that is us tapping into a phenomenon in Israel of a revival of piyutim. Lots of contemporary artists, as you know, have been recording these beautiful liturgical poems over the last 5 or 6 years. And so we realized there's a real openness to using, reclaiming, repurposing some of this poetry.
You know, it has always seemed to me that the High Holy Day, two observations. The High Holy Days are a time when the Jews who are the least familiar with the liturgy are most likely to be in the synagogue. And it's also a time when, which used to be mandatory, everybody came on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, people that belonged to the synagogue and people didn't belong to the synagogue felt an obligation to attend. That's not as true as it used to be. Do you think this machzor will have some impact on both of those elements?
I hope so. I mean, the points that you raise were in our mind at every point of this process. The stakes are really high, and we realized that these words and the translation and the left-hand side poems and creative readings that mirror the right side and the commentary below the line, all of this had to kind of pass muster with knowing that this needs to deeply touch Jews who might currently only come to the synagogue a few times a year. And at the same time, we wanted enough depth and enough texture there to speak to Jews who are there in the synagogue every Shabbat. So I hope that we've accomplished. We've certainly been striving to accomplish a way of speaking deeply to both of those populations.
I have to congratulate you because a friend of Rabbi Elise Frischman's, and the process of creating Mishkan Tefillah ended up being torturous. Tortuous? I never know how to pronounce that word. This seems to have been, in many ways, a more organic process. And you've brought it to the community in what, for a prayer book, is not such a long period of time. How do you feel about it now as you're kind of reaching the climactic
moment?
Well,
I think that learning from the experience of the release of Mishkan Tefillah, it was decided even before we were brought on board that this would have a kind of collaborative, incremental process, that we would pilot services, hundreds of Reform synagogues. I'm not sure if your synagogue had an opportunity to pilot one or more of the services, but many congregations did. They gave us feedback. We've used that feedback to go back to an original draft and make changes. So this was developed over the last 5 years with a lot of input from other rabbis and cantors and from congregants who tried this out and told us what they thought. So again, it's like with having four editors, this also made the process longer. It made it a lot more work, but I think the final product will be that much more meaningful and powerful.
May it achieve great acceptance and success and bring more people to the High Holy Day prayers that are so beautiful. I want to thank Rabbi Leon Morris for a great visit here on Two Jewish. The Machzor is not yet commercially available, but it'll be piloted in more congregations in the coming months, and it will be available in final form for the next year's High Holy Days. Leon, thanks again.
Thank you so much, Sam. I hope your community knows, and I'm sure they do, what a tremendous gift you are to them. And I miss having you as a classmate.
Me too. Thanks, Leon. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Molly Antipol, the author of a terrific new book of Jewish short stories called The Un-Americans. Our playout this morning comes from Danny Masseng. It's his setting of the meditation for humility that is included at the end of the private prayer, the Amidah, Elohai Nitzor. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Time in a memory, we can't rely on sheet, and she can't find a